My name's Michelle O'Wear, I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another Project. The date today is the 24th of August 2009 and the time is 7:29 a.m. Could you tell me your name, your age and where you come from, please?
Hi, my name's Alistair McKenzie and I'm 26 and at the moment I live in London on a boat on the Thames.
How are you feeling?
I'm feeling a bit just like I'm waking up and I'm excited, looking forward to seeing what it's like up there.
What's your boat like? Can you describe it for me?
Yeah, so it's a rather bizarre looking catamaran and I share it with a couple, and it looks out over MI5 and the well, it looks out towards Chelsea. It's on the Battersea Park side of things, and it's built by some engineering students who ran out of money, so it's quite quirky and odd shaped. It looks like something out of Mad Max, and it's got lots of things growing on it because I love gardening. So
what's it called, the boat?
It's called Yogurt because the people who ran out of money whilst building it, the fable goes that they survived by eating yogurt and biscuits.
How long have you been living there?
I moved to London in September last year. I'd been living and working at a great place down in Devon called Embercombe and came to London to seek adventure.
Have you found it?
Yes. A little bit too much. So I'm working as a leadership and management advisor with a company called Triangle, and I do that 3 days a week, and that gets me all over London meeting people who run their own businesses, and it's been fascinating, really eye-opening for me. And the rest of the time I'm working to create a floating venue on the Thames that is providing a really inspirational space for people who want to come and think deeply about issues or want to come and have really interesting conversations. They can book the space. It will be a 25-metre Thames lighter, the name of these huge barges with trees growing on it and plants and herbs and flowers and vegetables, and a really huge wooden structure where people can go and have meetings and parties.
Do you envisage that also being used as a performance space or not, or is it just for...
Definitely, we're the core team behind it. There's myself and there's two fine artists, one who most of his art is about creating boats and carving and sculptures, so he's really keen to have the practical, the hands-on, really working with kids to do workshops. And we're very central, so we're looking to create relationships with the Tate or with the South Bank and be able to take people out on journeys, and also arts organisations if they want to kind of think about maybe things like, you know, it's quite symbolic, us being a boat, and then issues to do with climate change and, you know, what's going to happen to the city. If they want to talk about those issues, then, you know, the boat could provide a really creative space to think innovatively about these kind of things.
And where did the idea come from for the floating venue?
I've always been really fascinated about creating spaces for people where they can think differently, and, you know, where seeds can be planted and where ideas germinate. And it was my friend Jay who kind of found this boat and thought, oh wow, this is a real possibility. So it was his spark, and I have come along with my friend Adam to help make it happen. But before, I said I was down in Devon, and before I was working looking after a herb garden down in Devon at this place, Embercombe. And again, it was, you know, not a very big space, but there was so much magic there for people. They come into a space and there were plants growing and very healing and just really simple things for people to do, sowing seeds, harvesting. and just a chance for people to have conversations that you wouldn't normally have in the bustle of day to day. And I saw some really, well, at least for me, I had some pretty profound kind of changes in perspective from being there for a year. And all the people who came, and there was so much desire to volunteer and to help and to help look after the space, which you don't really get in most public spaces. People assume that someone else is being paid to look after it. But here everyone was wanting to be involved.
When did you first become interested in gardening?
I suppose it's been in the background for me my whole life. My great-granddad was a great grower of vegetables and things, and my dad actually, he lectures at an agricultural college. But didn't at all seem to be the path that I was taking until I'd come to London and I'd studied and I'd travelled, was lucky enough to be able to travel in Europe and in Mexico, and just saw how precious the connection of people to their land is. And felt that I had kind of got that, but actually didn't really have many of the practical skills of knowing what it takes to work the land practically. So I arrived in Devon a little bit lost, and you know, my gap year had stretched into two gap years and I wasn't quite sure where I was going. I had a strong feeling of doing what I should be doing, but it was a bit worryingly vague. And so at Embakuma I was able to train in gardening with a fantastic gardening teacher called Joe Clark, and just, I suppose, apprenticed to him for a year and learned both the spirit of gardening and the practical gardening and the science of it and the art of it, and how to work with people in the garden, because often gardening can be quite a lonely affair. But what I loved about this place was we'd have rows of maybe 15 or 20 primary school kids would come, and they'd all be planting runner beans, and it would be part gardening, part performance and part crowd control. And then they'd come back after 3 or 4 months and they'd see this whole row of runner beans. Or maybe they'd come back and they'd see nothing, and we'd have to tell them the story of the little field mice who had come in, and we'd found little holes at perfect spacing where all the children had planted, and this little field mouse had gone and eaten every single one. But just, you know, connecting kids to the cycles of time and of nature was really rewarding, and for me to remember those things as well. So it's only been the last few years that I've really got into gardening, but it's a lifetime thing, so I don't need to rush particularly.
You're still learning and will be learning for some time to come.
Yeah, my whole life. And that's a really nice thing. There's no real pressure. You just, like, each season you learn more, you fail a bit more, you learn from your mistakes.
Have you got a garden on the boat?
I've got, the boat is tied to a big concrete pier. And I've made, using old recycled pallets and wooden frames, I've made some raised beds. And that's something that, oh wow, you know, I'd walk out of where I used to live in Devon and there would be this, you know, 2 acres of crumbly red Devon earth, and just rich with earthworms and compost and just so alive. And then just coming to London and this, you know, it took me 2 weeks to get enough earth together to, you know, really good earth. And part of that was a trip down to Kent and then buying some compost. But then I thought, well, why don't I just go and dig some up from next door. But looking up at the great big chimney of Battersea Power Station, and there are all these roads nearby like Mercury Way and Lead Avenue, and you just think, what's gone on in that soil? So I suppose the lesson for me was how precious earth is, you know. At a big scale, you know, the earth is very precious, but at a really small scale, if you want to grow anything, you need to have a growing medium. And this is only maybe 2 meters square that I've got, but it's really precious. I really love it.
What do you grow?
At the moment, I've got I've got rampaging squash that have just, it's, you know, I don't know, bigger than two footballs. One has just gone for it. I've got beetroot and coriander and parsley, tomatoes, lettuce. And this is all from just like a meter square. It's not, you don't need much space. But my most most proud of, I've got a pot with goji berries. I found this amazing woman in just a cycling through a really suburban part of London, and I saw a little sign that said goji berries for sale. I went and knocked on the door, and she took me through into the back garden. And this, you know, all, there wasn't very much earth in the back garden. It was mostly concrete slabs. But she'd got, in old bread trays, delivery trays, she'd got 3 years' worth of goji berry cuttings. And, you know, all in pots, so these little pots. And so I went home with three bags of goji berry plants. And it's just taken off. It's this... went from about a foot high to just rampaging all over the place, trailing, and just so many fruit. I've seen loads and loads of bees coming to pollinate, so that's been really fun. Yeah, so I've got quite a lot of produce, and I think that's really nice, because that area of Battersea 100 or more years ago used to be the asparagus growing capital of London. That's where everything, because, you know, there's so much produce used to be grown in the city and close to the city.
Where did you find yourself?
So I have a friend who comes to stay on the boat who's an organic market trader, because New Covent Garden is just 1 minute away, and he knows everything about veg you could possibly want to know. So he was telling me the story of Vauxhall area, and that's how I found out.
What are you going to do with your own plinth?
Well, I've got a lovely terracotta pot, and a friend gave me a really beautiful acorn. I'm not sure where it came from, I'm going to ask him, but I thought that what I'd like to use the time is to plant that acorn. And just to, I think I'll probably just stand there and be really still, because there's so much hustle and bustle and pace, and I love that. But I also love, or I've just found it personally really, really helpful to think about the long time scale of things. And, you know, an oak tree won't be really getting mature until maybe 150 years from now, and it could well go on for 400 years. And I'll sit there, I'll be mic'd up, so I might talk about all the things that this oak tree might see in its life, or what it might be faced with, and the things that it will need to survive. Or I might just stand there, I haven't quite felt that yet. But the other thing that I've been doing is training in a martial art called Cheng Xin, which is about how do you stay really, really relaxed and centered regardless of what's going on, all the bustle around you. So I might just do some just standing there in that way. So I don't think there'll be much spectacle, but I'll know that there's an oak tree just beginning its life, so that's quite nice.
Where will you put the oak tree?
I only found out about this yesterday, so I'm in two minds. I might take it down to Devon, to this place, Embercombe, or I might just wait for a little while and have it on the boat with me and see. I'd really like it to be in a place where I felt that it was the land itself was going to be stewarded and looked after, and I wasn't going to be dug up or turned into a, you know, a building site in the near future. So that's something I'd really like to find a really good, safe place for it.
Can you remember how you first heard about this project?
Yeah, I'd seen it in the newspapers, and I thought that it was really, really powerful idea. I really love the work of Anthony Gormley, and I love the aliveness of it, having real people up there. And then more recently, a friend was invited to be on the plinth, and I came to support him, and it was a lovely afternoon, well, late afternoon, and he played a saxophone on the plinth. And so it was through actually coming here and coming to the offices and seeing what's going on that I thought, well, yeah, I'll put my name forward. And I had one previous call to come and be on the plinth at 3 a.m. and unfortunately I had my phone turned off, but I'm not sure if I would have made it anyway.
Describe yourself as a person?
I'd probably try not to.
Did you choose 3 words to go on your profile?
No, I've registered online, but I maybe didn't get through to the profile stage. If I was going to be put on the spot to answer that now, 3 words, calm, mischievous, and hopeful.
How does your mischievous side manifest itself?
I think it just comes out sometimes when I think about how, you know, just how mad the whole, especially moving to the city, human beings are so quirky, and we know so much about the world and how precious it is, and how, you know, and it's in quite a lot of peril, but we just carry on doing the most bizarre things with our energy. And sometimes that gets me quite despondent, but then other times it just makes me, I just see the mischievousness of things and how we don't really quite know what we're doing. But as long as we do it with flair and care, then, you know, we don't really know what the outcome's gonna be. And I like spontaneous things. I like things like being phoned up on a Sunday night and being asked to stand on a plinth in the middle of London, and I like building floating boats. And on Saturday I was hanging out in a treehouse gallery in Regent's Park, and all these kind of things that slightly subvert the main story that we're being told all the time about ways to live. I love stories that create a little bit of space, a little bit of magic. So that's maybe where my mischievousness comes.
Are you looking forward to going on the plinth now?
Yeah, yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I suppose just to encourage people to do a bit of gardening. It's really easy, and it's a good thing to do. And you don't really need to know what you're doing. Nature's pretty, got a good few million years worth of evolution, and if you don't plant the seeds at exactly the right time, it'll probably work out okay, and as long as you have the basics. And it's nurturing to yourself as well as to whatever it is that you've planted.
Thank you very much.